Impression. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Yes, hello, welcome to Next Fan Up. I am Ryan, the Jaguars superfan. I will be your host this evening or morning, depending on when you're listening. And we are recapping the Week 15 games up until Sunday night. We don't know the outcome of the Sunday night game. We are taping this beforehand, so you know. But it's not just me. Let's say hello to Andrew, our Jets superfan. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Ryan. It feels a little weird watching a football Sunday without having the Jets and sort of watching it through a different prism, but the other New York team sort of had a game today.
Yes, they did, and I'm thinking if it's all right with you guys, we're probably going to talk about that game. But first, I want to say hi to Monty, who's our Raiders super fan. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Just cracked up in another beer, kind of drowning out the sorrows a little bit. Fantasy heartbreak, the Raiders got roughed up at home. So, I mean, I'm doing all right.
Well, look, it's nice to be honest, guys. You know, we could just be open. We're out on the air here. Let's get it all out, because I'm not doing too well myself. As I said, I'm the Jaguars super fan. We are going to talk about Thursday and Saturday. Just to recap all the games from Week 15 minus Sunday and Monday night. But we're going to start with a very, very interesting game between the Panthers and Giants. And we have Sam, our Giants superfan, who's going to talk about this one first. How are you doing, Sam?
As good as the situation would allow me to be, surprisingly.
Yeah, you know, I realize we have three guys, including myself, who are in a little bit of a down mood and not happy with the outcome of some of these games. But let me set this up. So the game ends 38-35. We got a field goal from Carolina. Crazy comeback from the Giants. You know, stop me if you've heard that one before. And, you know, it's 35-7, like, for a second there, but really we also have an underlying storyline the entire game with Odell Beckham Jr. and Josh Norman, like, throwing punches and taking out chairs and hitting each other, whatever happened on the field. So Sam, 35-7, Giants come back, but let's get to Odell Beckham in a bit. Just tell me about the game, first of all, you know, the big comeback. How'd the Giants do it?
The Giants did it by the way they thought they would be doing it all game. They were just completing short passes and moving the ball, running when it was advantageous when those linebackers, you know, were a little deeper in coverage. And it seems that the Giants don't really play their best brand of football until they're up against the wall down in these games. And the play calling at the end of the game was being called at the beginning of the game. I think you would have seen, you know, a much closer game the whole way out. It was just another, I think this one falls to the coaching staff, also for Odell Beckham's issues, but in general, it just seems like as each game passes, it becomes more clear that the total overhaul of the coaching needs to be made.
Wow, so we're in full fire Coughlin mode again in New York. I just want to make sure that that's what we're going with.
It's not fired, it's offering him an early retirement package.
Oh, well, that's nice. That's nice. You know, the Jaguars tried to offer him a really early one, and instead he won two Super Bowls.
I just think there becomes a point where a coach becomes too comfortable and isn't forced to change. And I think Coughlin, you know, he's been successful. He's older. I don't think he wants to change the way he coaches. And I think that's fine, but we don't need him to do that on our team anymore.
All right. Understood.
Go ahead. Sorry, Ryan. I just want to get one thing in there. Of course, people are sick of Coughlin. He's been there for a long time. But I don't think the coaching is the issue on this team. I'd point more to personnel than anything else. It just seems that the Giants have Eli and Manning, and they have two cornerbacks. And besides that, they have nothing on their roster that you really, like, hang your hat on. And it's showing on the Giants' record. They can't even win a lousy NFC East, even though it seems like the Eagles and the Cowboys and the Redskins are trying to hand it to them.
I mean, sure, you could say that, but how many end-of-the-game scenarios have been ruined by the coaching? I'm just talking, not even if plays go differently, just if different plays or calls are made, how many of those games go differently, and if those games were flipped, what are the Giants now? It's have 10 wins if the coaching was better. So, yes, it is the personnel. They're not very good, but they've been in every game, and it seems like a lot of it is bad play calling at the end of games.
My point would be is that I'm not sure another coach gets them in that position in the first place to even make that mistake, to make that time management gaffe or that offensive play call that ruins the game. Like, I think Coughlin's actually done a pretty decent job, better than a lot of coaches would in that situation.
Maybe. I mean, I'm ready to see what other coaches will do. We don't really know. I like McAdoo. I think when he gets to use his system and gets to call his game, I feel like it works. I like Spagnuolo. That defense is trash, and, you know, they make plays sometimes, but they really don't have anybody in the front seven. So we do need an overhaul of personnel. We have $50 million in free agency money plus the draft this year. So, you know, let's look forward to next year at this point.
All right, well, we got the game out of the way. The Panthers remain undefeated. One tidbit I want to throw in. I got a few of these here. There's some really interesting stats and streaks going on. But Cam, I saw 19 touchdowns, one interception in his last six games, playing amazing. But everyone wants to know about the main event, which was the fight between Odell Beckham Jr. and Josh Norman all game. And people in the Twitterverse are calling for ejections and everything. What is your take? Are you going to defend your guy? Were they cheap shots? Just what's your take on their whole fight going on?
So this thing with Odell goes back to last year when he was taking a lot of shots last year, and I was praising him for not responding to a lot of these, just getting up and playing the game. I just think there becomes a certain point where nobody can take it, and a lot of these cornerbacks and safeties do like hitting him because that's what you do to smaller playmakers. As you hit them, you try to scare them coming across the middle. And this year, it seems like he's not taking nothing from anybody. So the first play of the game, he drops a long touchdown pass where he completely burns Norman. And, you know, receivers make mistakes. Every receiver drops passes. Fine. The next time down the field, it's actually Norman who instigates the first play. And he wraps him up after the play, throws him to the ground. Fine. And then Odell Beckham, you know, he could have gotten one shot in. I would have excused him. He could have gotten two, maybe. But he let it affect his game. He threw his helmet-to-helmet hit on that late block, and that's really the most unacceptable play. The rest is pushing after the play and fighting and throwing punches at somebody's helmet, I don't think, are really big deals. That helmet-to-helmet block is uncalled for. I think he should get fined. But, you know, Norman isn't exactly the cleanest player. It's not like he got into a fight with the Nobel Peace Prize winner, so I'm not really worried about Odell Beckham's behavior.
So, two things also. Oh, go ahead.
Second time, we'll go back and forth, Ryan. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, well, two things. I'm glad you said that. I only saw the helmet-to-helmet thing in slow motion at first, and it looked bad, and I was wondering, and I saw it in real time, and oh, my goodness, it's totally uncalled for. And maybe surprised he didn't get ejected or something, but that one, he's got to get fined or something.
He was trying to do that thing where you come in late on a play and get a cheap hit, but it still looks like the play, except he made helmet contact. Stupid thing to do. I think he deserves the fine he's going to get. Well,
and I forgot the second thing, so Andrew, go ahead.
Well, I love it just because it gets people mad, and anything that gets people mad, I'm a fan of. But, like, we're talking fines here. People are calling for suspensions, and I think a big part of that is that just people don't like the guy. People don't like Odell Beckham. He seems to be a little bit full of himself, which I can't blame him. The things he does on the field are ridiculous. But the thing that bothers me about it is that the stuff Norman was doing, he'd stand over Beckham for a second after the play, and then he'd get up, and then Beckham couldn't take it. It's like he couldn't take the shot to his ego whenever Norman did something that might have emasculated him for like a split second, and then he cost his team 15 yards after the play. He's got to be smarter than that, and he's got to know that he's going to be seeing that over and over again just because he's so good and he's the only guy who's gonna hurt you if you're facing the Giants.
I think it was just the perfect storm of the dropped pass, the having no catches in the first half, and having Norman He wasn't even playing so well, honestly. It was more those middle linebackers and that those safeties helping him. So really, it was just a perfect storm, and I think, you know, people have their bad days. Some of us have our bad days by ourselves. Some of us have it on national TV. So, you know, he's still my boy, and that's really it. I think it's simple. Yeah.
Of course, he's still your guy. He's on your team. And I just want to say that I'm with Andrew, and I like anything that gets specific players mad at each other and rivalries. I like that more than the jersey swaps going on. So I like if this is going to be a nice thing we see again at some point for sure.
And listen, the biggest thing was that in that fourth quarter on the comeback, he took a third down pass for 60 yards downfield, and then he burned Norman on a touchdown pass. So, you know, he makes plays, and, you know, Panthers, they got to him. I think that was a little part of their game plan was, you know, hit him a little bit, get him angry. And surprisingly, the Giants, nobody in the Giants really said anything to him until late in that third quarter. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. Antonio Brown really showed up today, so I think he's back in that number two wide receiver in the league slot. So, it is what it is.
It's funny you mentioned that none of his teammates really came to his defense. I think that's pretty telling. I mean, it's hard. Obviously, we're not in the locker room and we're not around these guys, but it just seems like it's a natural thing when you see a guy like Beckham making all these plays and even going back to last year, like celebrating like they just won the Super Bowl while his team is just getting killed week after week and losing on these plays. It just seems like it would be human nature to sort of grow some discontent if you're another player on that team just looking at this guy week after week like having a one-man show.
I mean, sure, but before today, nothing he's ever done on the field has ever affected his on-field performance or the team's chances of winning. So while I get that, I don't think there's any truth to that. A lot of it is probably injuries. These guys are not really the founding members of this team. The offensive line is ravaged by Victor Cruz. I think a lot of it has to do with that. I don't know. You never know. I mean, I don't think anybody in the team really hates Odell. It's kind of hard to hate the only reason you're winning games.
Yeah, well, certainly it's probably the most interesting game of the day, perhaps one that we're going to talk about later. But bottom line, the Panthers remain undefeated, and technically the Giants are still in the race. We got a lot more games to get to. Sam, I know you got to go, and we got to get to 13 more of them. And thank you for coming on and talking Giants and ODB.
Well, enjoy, guys. Have a good day. Bye.
All right, you too. All right, moving on. We got to go back in time to the Thursday night game real quick with Monty, who we haven't heard from in a little bit. Just give us a quick recap of the game of the year between the Bucks and the Rams.
This Buccaneers-Rams game from Thursday night, it feels like an eternity ago because we had the Saturday night game in between. I had all these full play the Sunday games. But I think the story of this game was that St. Louis was able to make the stops when they needed to make the stops, and that they couldn't – Case Keenum made the big plays. He had that big throw down the field to Britt, and Tavon Austin made a couple of plays. And Todd Gurley went to the goal line. Honestly, there's really not much – else to say about this. Tampa Bay is eliminated from playoff contention. Jameis made a couple of mistakes like he's wont to do. He's a rookie quarterback. He's going to make mistakes. And Doug Martin played a great game, which was pretty surprising to me considering that St. Louis's D-line is one of the best in the league, especially with a guy like Aaron Donald. But again, two teams who we shouldn't be spending so much time on. They're both probably going to go 7-9, 8-8, and we'll see him next year.
There you go. True on that. And obviously that was Andrew helping us out and not Monty. Monty will join us back in a little bit. And it was 31-23 Rams win. Yes, let's move on to your boys here. We got the New York Jets taking on the Dallas Cowboys and Matt Castle. But wait. Actually, it was Kellen Moore. But the Jets get the win, 19-16. Breakdown Saturday night's game, Andrew.
Well, I feel a lot worse about this game, which is pretty hard to say because, like, the Jets played a really, really bad game Saturday night, but I feel worse about it now after watching the Sunday games because the Jets aren't in contention and they didn't look nearly as good as what Pittsburgh looked like today or even what KC looked like. But they got the win. mostly because of the way they've been winning the past couple of weeks. They have three weapons on offense in Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, and Bilal Powell, and they get them the ball when they need to get them the ball. And if the Cowboys had any semblance of competent quarterback play during this game, the Jets are probably at 8-6 right now and outside of the playoff picture, as opposed to them now being tied. But Kellen Moore is not an NFL quarterback, and neither, to me at least at this point, is Matt Cassel. And the Jets' defense made enough plays. They had four interceptions, especially a really big interception in the end zone by Calvin Pryor. They made enough plays to give Fitzpatrick time to get the ball to his weapons. Quincy Enunwa had a very big catch on a 3rd and 14 on the go-ahead touchdown drive, where Eric Decker caught a little rub route touchdown in the corner of the end zone. But looking forward as a Jets fan, if I had a gun to my head asking me if they're going to be making the playoffs right now, I'd have to say no, just because based on the schedule that they have, they're facing the Patriots next week, and if they lose all the tiebreakers. But if they go 10-6 and don't make the playoffs, it's still a pretty successful year, in my opinion. I thought they were going to win 9-10 games, but that was probably on the more optimistic side of it. People were calling me a homer, and there's no way Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be able to lead a team to 10 wins. He's never had more than 8. But the Jets are on the up and up when it comes to the long term. So I like what I've seen this season, but not this past Saturday night. This past Saturday night was an abomination. If they actually played a legit NFL football team, maybe they would have lost.
Well, a win is a win, and trust me, I've now learned over the years, I'm sure you have too, just to take whatever win that you get. But interesting that you're not too confident in their playoff hopes, but I completely understand with the schedule and also with the other teams in that mix. And speaking of one of those teams, that would be the red hot Kansas City Chiefs, 34-14 over whatever's left of the Baltimore Ravens. Just kind of a miserable season and pretty odd to see out of Baltimore, because they're always in contention and it's just been an awful year. But so obviously the Panthers are the hottest team in football because, hey, they're undefeated and maybe they still can go undefeated for the season. But here's a nice little tidbit from today that everyone might have seen, but they're the first team in history with a 5-game losing streak and an 8-game winning streak in the same season. So right now they're on the 8-game win streak, and Kansas City is rolling, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their schedule on this 8-game streak. The first win was at home against the Steelers, but if I remember correctly, Roethlisberger either didn't play that game or was hurt. And then they beat the Lions at Denver, which is probably the most impressive win. But then at San Diego, home against Buffalo, at Oakland, home against San Diego, and then at Baltimore. And then now they have the Browns and the Raiders the next 2 weeks. I was having this argument with Nick, our Chiefs superfan, and about the Jets and the Jets, Steelers, and the Chiefs. To me, the Steelers are clearly the number one team out of those three. But if I had to choose between the Jets and the Chiefs, I'd choose the Jets just based on their personnel. But it just seems that Kansas City beats the bad teams that they're supposed to beat. Alex Smith doesn't make mistakes. They have a lot of guys in the backfield. Like Spencer Ware didn't even get a carry today. But they have four legitimate running backs at the beginning of the year, with Jamal Charles, Spencer Ware, Charkandrick West, and Nile Davis. And their defense makes plays. Marcus Peters had another pick six today. He has 7 picks on the year, which leads the NFL. He gets beat a lot, but he also makes plays, and that's what Kansas City needs him to do, and he's doing it.
Right, yeah, and they had another defensive score, I think, at a fumble return. And their defense has just been the big reason why Kansas City is still in it. And you got the efficient Alex Smith only missing 4 passes, but you know, he only threw for 171 yards, but hey, that's what's getting it done. And yeah, after losing Jamal Charles is around the time, or maybe it was the time where they got on this roll. So it is pretty crazy. Interesting that, of course, you take your team over the Kansas City Chiefs. I'd have a really tough time picking between them because, I mean, both defenses are nice there, but yeah, Kansas City is just on fire, but Jets might actually have the QB advantage, which is a little interesting to look at, but we got to move on to another part of the playoff picture. because somebody has to win the AFC South. And look, I was hoping it would be the Jaguars. Even where we sat before today started, it was kind of an uphill battle because first we had the Texans at the Colts in just a barn burner. Just kidding. It was not a pretty game. And the really interesting thing, of course, that you got going on here is TJ Yates was in, but now he has torn his ACL, and Brandon Whedon came in and I guess you say led the Texans for the comeback. I mean, he threw the game winning touchdown pass eventually, but the Texans get the 16-10 win over the 40-year-old Matt Hasselbeck led Colts. And what do you make of this game, Andrew? I mean, there's not too much to say.
Yeah, to be honest, I did not watch a second of this game because
sure.
The best player, if you take DeAndre Hopkins out of this game, I don't think there's a single player that was starting on fantasy teams this week. To be honest, it was just Matt Hasselbeck the four quarterbacks I played in this game were Brandon Whedon, TJ Yates, Matt Hasselbeck, and Charlie Whitehurst. If that doesn't say anything about the AFC South, I don't know what else does.
You just named those four quarterbacks, and that is pretty incredible. But right now, the Texans have the stronghold on the division, or that's probably the wrong word to use. They're in the lead right now because they're 7-7. Colts dropped to 6-8 with the Texans 16-10 victory, and a team that could have been closer to possibly getting this division title is the Jacksonville Jaguars, my beloved squad. But they fell to the Falcons today, 23-17. It's pretty much a story that I'd seen before, a close game. Yeah, I wrote in my preview, which you guys can all find on Facebook. If you search Next Fan Up on Facebook, you can find all the previews of all the superfans. In mine, I made sure to caution everybody because Atlanta scored 0 points last week and Jacksonville scored 51. So, hey, you look at that, and it's like a guaranteed Jaguars win, and I knew that it was going to be close. I didn't know who was going to win, but a lot of mistakes from Bortles. You got the pick right before halftime. So instead of going into the half 14-10, and it was right at the goal line, by the way, Andrew, I don't know if you saw that, but right before halftime, basically the one-yard line, Bortles throws a pick, and instead the Falcons return it and get to kick a field goal, so it's 17-3 at halftime. Jags get their offense rolling in the second half again, kind of like last week. They score two touchdowns. Matt Ryan did throw an interception, which seemed to possibly help the cause, but eventually Atlanta came away with the win. And for the second week in a row, the Jaguars have had troubles on third down. We were 0-for-8 today. And much of the game, even with the 51 points last week, did not really convert third downs. I think there were two in that game. So it came down to a final drive, and the Jags just couldn't get it done. And promising for next year, but we're getting closer to being eliminated, but not technically out of it. So we got a chance, right, Andrew? Guaranteed?
Yeah. Yeah, it just sounds like it's been the same story every year for this Jacksonville team. Sort of like always next year. But honestly, next year is the year because you look at the rest of the AFC South, the Colts are Andrew Luck and nothing else. The Texans don't have a quarterback. And the Titans are still a couple years away, in my opinion. That's to surround Mariota with more skilled talent, and they're still on the transition on defense. The Jaguars have something they can hang their hat on in that they have three receivers in Robinson and Hurns, and also Marquise Lee, who was actually the guy who was taken before Hurns and Robinson in that draft, who made a pretty ridiculous catch today that I saw. At least he sort of juggled it, but ended up making the catch on the floor. But it's sort of odd because Gus Bradley was brought in to fix the defense, and then it's the offensive side of the ball with Bortles and those skill guys, plus TJ Yeldon, who didn't play today because of an injury. But it's the offense that's been carrying Jacksonville this year. So what does that say about the job Gus Bradley's doing in Jacksonville?
Yeah, Gus Bradley. I'm not sure about him. I haven't been sure for a while. A lot of inconsistency, which I kind of put on the head coach. And right, his stamp is defense, and the defense hasn't really been there. Today, I'll say they played well enough to win. Got a game changing kind of interception, so we could tie the game. But in general, the defense has not been good enough. And there's nothing really special about them. There's maybe Telvin Smith, who's a linebacker, who's a really solid player, but I don't know if we have any Pro Bowlers yet. You know, I'm hoping for it, but right now the defense isn't getting it done. Julio Jones scored for the first time in a while. He had a touchdown today, and the Falcons, really, a big difference of the game was third downs. The Falcons converted third downs at opportune times, and it was the exact opposite for the Jags, who did not convert a single one. So, moving on, we've got the Bears and the Vikings, and obviously one of these teams is looking headed to the playoffs in the Minnesota Vikings, and not so much the Chicago Bears. And Teddy threw for four touchdowns and missed just three passes, so looks like the Vikings took care of business against the Bears, Andrew.
Yeah, and they did it missing three of their best defenders. Again, last week they faced Arizona and they didn't have Linval Joseph, Anthony Barr, or Harrison Smith, and they gave Arizona, who I believe is one of the three best teams in football, they gave them a game. And this week they limited Jay Cutler to only 17 points, and they were missing Adrian Peterson, and yet they have a good backup in Jerick McKinnon, and as you said before, Teddy Bridgewater had a career game. He lobbed a beautiful throw to Stephon Diggs in the end zone, and then Diggs made a couple of guys miss on another crossing route to get 6 points. Minnesota's a legit team, and they could very well be the 5 seed in the NFC if they gain a game on Seattle, but that might not happen. Even if they are the 6 seed and have to face Green Bay, I mean, we've seen it before. The Vikings can beat the Packers. So if I'm a Vikings fan, I'm looking at this year as just year one in the next five years of a very good run.
I think you're right. A lot of people were looking at the Vikings at the beginning of the year to really make a leap, and it looks like they are. It looks like they're going to be one of those last few playoff teams. And while I think the Packers could get it done, I'm sure the Packers don't want to see the Vikings, that's for sure, in the playoffs. But, Vikings took care of business today, and 38 points, it's, you know, even though they're at home and it's against the Bears, you know, whatever, it's an NFL team, and they really showed up today. We'll see what they have in store come playoff time. Speaking of playoff time, hey, fellas, the New England Patriots. Fellas, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is Mafia. I'm back on. I had a bit of an emergency with the little man upstairs. But I think that
Welcome
the
back.
Vikings' defense is good. And Andrew had a great point. Their defense is missing three of their stars. You look across the Vikings' offensive roster, I mean, those wide receivers just aren't getting it done. Mike Wallace, I don't know, signed from the Dolphins. He hasn't done anything since he left Big Ben. Diggs had a couple of touchdowns today, but he really only had three catches. He, these are his first catches since like week 8 or something. They don't have much talent. So I know that the big headline is Teddy Bridgewater. You know, he's kind of like he's a good NFL quarterback where he kind of takes what the defense gives him, but he doesn't push it. But I don't think they have that much talent helping him out. So with this defense being kind of on the cusp of being one of the elite top tier defenses and Adrian Peterson carrying the team, I think that the Vikings are going to be competitive, but they're going to need to give Teddy Bridgewater some help before they kind of send him. You know, you've got a good young quarterback who's talented, but you don't give him any wide receivers. I think we've seen this story time and time again. So I think this year it'll be fun to watch the Vikings make a run, but I don't know how long Adrian Peterson can keep it up. And you got to get somebody more than Jarius Wright and Stephon Diggs and Charles Johnson as your starting wide receiver tandem to make.
The Vikings are still a little bit away, and yeah, Stephon Diggs had disappeared for weeks, and now he shows up with two touchdowns, which is probably nice for Vikings fans to see. But I think I'm with you. It's just kind of not enough yet. But hey, once you're in, you know, who knows what can happen. someone who's been there.
That defense in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be a tough. It will not be an easy out by any means. I mean, they're going to be tougher than the NFC East winner, barring it's one of the crazy, you know, giant Super Bowl runs. But you know, Sam doesn't seem too confident in that. But it's certainly not going to be easy. And yeah, they can win that first game. They're going to be good enough for that. The New England Patriots, obviously in the playoffs many times, played one of the worst teams in the NFL, the Tennessee Titans. Not too much to say about this. The Patriots took care of business, but Mariota did get hurt, and Mettenberger came in to finish the game. Patriots still don't have their full complement of weapons, but they get the 33-16 victory over the Titans.
Yeah, and I think they locked up a first-round bye. I think with the Denver Broncos losing, the Patriots are guaranteed to have a first-round bye, which is going to help them, you know, get healthy right at the right time. So, bully for the Patriots, another awesome chance to make it to the Super Bowl. Great.
Yeah, we got a lot of Patriots love right here, I'm sure, with our Raiders superfan and our Jets superfan.
Yeah, I forget about the Patriots. We're going to be talking about them for a while. There was actually one thing I wanted to mention about the Titans. Ryan mentioned that Mariota got hurt. Zach Mettenberger, who a lot of guys liked coming into this year as a potential trade candidate this offseason, went 20 for 28 for 242 yards, two touchdowns, and two picks. Even if you watch the Saturday night game between the Jets and the Cowboys, you could see the absolute lack of quarterback play in this league. To me, Zach Mettenberger has value, and if you're a team looking for a quarterback and you're not drafting in the top of the draft, maybe you go after him and put him in a quarterback competition. But I think a better question would be is if you look at all these teams like the Cowboys and the Bengals and even like Denver, the value of a good backup quarterback has never been more apparent in this league, because you look at those teams, and right now you can't be sure they're a quarterback. You can't be sure they're a Super Bowl contender, because you don't know if they're going to be able to. Their backup quarterback could keep them afloat. I think a guy like Mettenberger might be able to, and maybe we'll see a team in the offseason go after him.
Well, I am in agreement with you, and to give our draft a plug, every year for Next Fan Up, we do a full mock draft of the actual NFL draft, and each fan picks for their team, you know, drafts their players. And I took Zach Mettenberger in the third round instead of taking Bortles in the first round. I'm glad I don't run the actual team, but I'm just saying I did like Mettenberger coming out, and hey, he could, I mean, there's a few teams that could roll the dice with him. Sure. Why not? But yeah, again, Patriots get the win. You're going to get the first round bye. You know, lather, rinse, repeat. It's
one
another
other
year.
Delanie Walker's touchdown run, if you guys haven't dialed up the highlights of that, that guy, he was like a grown man playing with a bunch of little kids. He literally just threw someone off him and just ran 57 yards for a touchdown. And then Doriel Green Beckham has actually had a good game this week, and he had a good game last week too. So, you know, with Mariota, there's some hope for the Titans. I mean, they're not one of those teams that are just down and continuing to stay down. Once you get a little bit of hope with the quarterback, they've got a couple other pieces. So I don't know. We'll see how their draft goes this year. But I think the Titans, they've got some hope. And that highlight from Delanie Walker is definitely worth checking out on the internet.
Well, this is Next Fan Up, so I'll just let it shine, and hopefully everyone knows by now that I despise the Titans more than any team in the league, but Delanie Walker has done it for a few seasons in a row now, and he is a good player. And yeah, Green Beckham, if he comes on, that is a scary thought that I would only like to see for the next 2 weeks, because the Jaguars need help from the Titans to get into the playoffs, possibly. I don't know why I'm talking about that. They don't have much of a chance. The Patriots' leading rusher today, by the way, Joey Iosifa? I think that's his name. So that's, you know, just another day in New England. Just plug that guy in. The Redskins and the Bills played on Sunday, and it was mainly the Redskins who ended up with the 35-25 victory Redskins get another win in that NFC East, trying to remain on top. Big game Thursday against the Eagles coming up. And Kirk Cousins, I mean, he does it again. I'll be the first to say I'm not a believer in this guy, and he just keeps telling me you like that. And do you guys have a takeaway from the Bills? I mean, not really showing up, even though it looks like a 10-point game. But Bills didn't really show up in this game till the third quarter, going against the Redskins, 35-25 victory.
Yeah, so much like you, I am not a Kirk Cousins guy. I think he's still going to get really overpaid this offseason. But to me, the bigger story in this game is that I think for the first time in Rex Ryan's career, and I've been following it since he became head coach of the Jets, that I really don't believe that the team was playing for him, was playing hard for him. There were a couple of reports before the game about how Mario Williams wasn't liking his role in the defense, and that there were other guys not liking the way Rex was running his defense. And it just seemed like, to me, I picked Buffalo in this game because Rex's history with quarterbacks that I would consider limited, that you know they don't have the arm strength to make certain throws, that Rex would force them to a turnover or two, and that would be it. And then their offense would make enough plays. And it's just the story of the Bills season is that coming into the year, everyone was the story for the Bills was, their defense is loaded. They're stacked on the line with Hughes, the Williams brothers, and Darius. And they have guys like Stephon Gilmore and Ronald Darby has had a great rookie season, might be defensive rookie of the year. But if they don't get good quarterback play, then they're doomed. Tyrod Taylor has exceeded all expectations, at least my expectations. And he's hitting Watkins on deep balls. Yeah, he still overthrows guys a bunch, but he makes plays with his legs. And LeSean McCoy, who got hurt in this game, has had a good year overall when he's been healthy. And Carlos Williams, too, the rookie out of Florida State, has been explosive. But they're 6-8, and they're not going to make the playoffs. So, again, another enigmatic Rex Ryan team losing a game, probably going to go 8-8, and we'll see what happens next year.
Totally agree with you, Andrew. And when I saw that Rex Ryan was going out to Buffalo, I thought that defense was going to be pure good. Like, not enough to catch up to the Patriots, but good enough to beat some of the other teams in the AFC. And I don't think the defense has lived up at all. I mean, the offense is playing way better than anyone would have thought. And the defense, just with some of the guys they have on that defense, I would have expected them to play a lot better. And I don't know if it's Russ's fault, if it's team fit, where they got to turn it over, but their defense isn't as good as I thought it was going to be going into the season. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's up with Rex and his ability to coach.
Yeah, and it was a good thing you mentioned LeSean McCoy, because he got knocked out of the game with a knee injury. So more bad news for the Bills. But yeah, the defense hasn't really been what it's been promised, and really just kind of fell into Tyrod Taylor, who's been the best choice clearly at quarterback, and his connection with Sammy Watkins is really strong, but not enough to take down Washington, with Washington winning.
That Shady McCoy deal was just a bad trade. Carlos Williams seems like a pretty good rookie back. They even had that, I don't know what his name is, so Leslie had a 60-yard touchdown run. I mean, running backs were not the issue. They probably could have used that linebacker that they traded away. I mean, Shady McCoy, I think, is great, but, man, he's not on the field, and they've got enough people at the running back position. So, I don't know. Just kind of an interesting trade from an outsider's perspective.
Yeah, plus all the trades, if you think about it. So McCoy for Alonzo and Bradford for Foles and the Jimmy Graham trade, he's now hurt, you know, makes a lot of pub in the offseason, but really are any of them holding up for any good reasons, you know? You're not really sure. Shady had a couple nice games, but trades aren't always what they're cracked up to be, and you don't usually see them actually in the NFL, so that was a unique offseason for sure. Monty, we got the Packers getting the win, 30-20, over the Raiders in the black hole. Packers offense still not really quite where we've been used to seeing them in past years, but a couple of picks by Derek Carr early on kind of put them in a hole. See what I did? I brought it back to the black hole thing. It was really good. I'm the host. Monty, just tell us about this game. We got, you know, like I said, the 30-20 victory. We expect the Packers to win, but hey, the Raiders surely had a shot at some point to win this game is how I felt. How about you?
Yep. They had the lead, so, I mean, I was swearing here in the third quarter when they lost it, but those two picks that Carr threw right in the first quarter, the Raiders are not a good enough team to overcome those kind of mistakes. So one of them was a pick six, so they started out literally 14-0 in the first quarter. They had an awesome second quarter. They came back at halftime. Woodson had a strip, but they turned into a touchdown right before the half, got the ball back, took the lead at the beginning of the third quarter. Raiders have been outscored in the fourth quarter by an astronomical amount. It's ridiculous, but I think you're right. If I was a Packers fan, I'd be a little bit concerned. The offense just isn't clicking, and it has to be more than just the Jordy Nelson injury. I don't know what the wide receivers are doing, but they don't seem like they're on the same page. Amari Cooper had a nice game for Raiders fans. He had a couple big catches, a couple touchdowns. I think they said on the broadcast that Derek Carr grew up as a Brett Favre fan at the weight number four. California is also a fan of Rodgers. I think he just came out a little bit. I thought he was excited. The guy turned over a couple quick turnovers, and the Raiders didn't really recover. Maybe it's just actually having a quiet, good year for a running back, but lately the Raiders have just been in a hole to start off the game, so they can't continue with the running game they're trying to have. Raiders wide receivers all got kind of banged up. So Cooper's been battling a foot injury. Crabtree left for a little bit. He ended up coming back, but he was banged up. The other rookie, Seth Roberts, he's had a couple of games left in game. So kind of what the Packers did is they dropped two safeties and tried to have the Raiders banged up wide receiving core, you know, beat them underneath. And they just weren't good enough to do that. So when I saw this game on the schedule, I thought it was going to be 50-3. With Aaron Rodgers just taking the traffic. Packers are not clicking. I'd be concerned if I was a Packers fan going into the playoffs. And the Raiders sitting at 6-8, which is about as good as I think anyone would have thought. At least that's as good as I thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season. And a lot of people told me I was crazy. So, I mean, I think it was a good performance. What are you going to do? They're not good enough to beat themselves. A lot of stupid turnovers and drops. Just kind of typical young team. Raiders making mistakes. And yeah, I think I'm going to go grab another beer while you guys finish up on this game.
Well, you know, pour some out for Jack Del Rio and the rest of the bunch there. You know, you and I, Jaguars and Raiders, baby, we got Derek Carr and we got Blake Bortles. So we may be in a couple of AFC championships coming up is the optimistic talk that I like to throw out there. But for today, yes, a loss to the Packers, who, despite their struggles, they're still a good team and trying to figure a lot of things out, but still good enough to get that victory in Oakland.
It's interesting.
Been a while since I've been on the game, been on the podcast, and I think you know, unless you play in the IDP league, Khalil Mack is an animal. That guy's a beast. He single-handedly won that game in Denver last week. Oh, I think it was in Oakland, but the Raiders won that game against Denver. I got another sack today, and that guy is special. So the core of players, I'm right with you, man. Hope it springs eternal for the Raiders. I don't know if they'll be playing in Oakland. I hope so, but with Cooper, Carr, and Khalil Mack, I think the Raiders are onto something, and Reggie McKenzie and Jack Del Rio are going to have a good run here.
It's interesting that you guys are on the podcast with me right now, because I was having this argument with my friend today, who would you rather have between Blake Bortles and Derek Carr? It seems that both guys have very good weapons, and they both have very good quarterback traits in that they have big arms, they could throw on the move, and they have good presence in the pocket. I mean, my friend went Carr because just based off his team is winning more games, and that he thinks that if Bortles was as good as his stats indicate, Jackson will be better. I tend to agree with that line of thinking, in that there's no way Bortles' stats are as good as he's been playing. Like he puts up a lot of stats when game flow dictates that Jacksonville must be throwing the ball more. But I'd also, my counter argument to that would be, if you put Bortles behind Oakland's offensive line and you put Carr behind Jacksonville's, I'd be interested to see what happens, because Oakland is one of the best pass-protecting lines in football. Donald Penn has had a very good year on the left side. Austin Howard on the right tackle was lost for the season yesterday, but he was having a good year. And Gabe Jackson and Rodney Hudson inside also were playing well. Meanwhile, Jacksonville's still relying on Luke Jokel to provide production from as a second overall pick in the draft, and he hasn't been playing well. So I'd be interested to see what you guys think there.
Does Bortles get any support from the running game? I swear I haven't seen a single stat or any commentary of a run. I don't even know who the running back is for Jacksonville. I mean, so it's like he has to throw it 50 times a game.
Yeah, T.J. Yeldon's a guy. He's been okay. I don't know. Yeldon's had some stats too, speaking of which, this year, and I feel like some of it's a little misleading. Every now and then, you know, at this point, he's you know, a poor man's Le'Veon Bell. That's kind of his style, just to give you an idea. But he's been okay, and the run blocking hasn't been great, and a great offensive line would certainly be nice. Bortles, I'll say, you know, talking about weapons, it's true, but it also takes confidence, and it's a double-edged sword. But he will throw it up to Robinson no matter when he is covered, and he just puts it in the right spot, and Robinson goes up and grabs it, and it's pretty amazing. And even with Hearns out one game, Robinson still had an awesome game. So I like Bortles, and I think his stats are kind of clear of how it's looked. But he throws right now.
He's a human being too, right?
Yes.
He's like a Big Ben size. He's like humongous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a big guy. He's actually, speaking of rushing, he's the second leading rusher on the team right now, which is not really what you want. But they don't really give Denard Robinson a chance. They just give it all to Yeldon, although Denard didn't have a great game today. But, yeah, they're looking at Yeldon. Bortles and Carr, I think a lot of people go Carr right now, and I don't really blame him. You know, Carr's having a great season, but I'm going to go with my guy, and it's going to be a really fun thing to watch over the next few years for sure.
We'd both probably stick up for our guys. I'm a fan of Carr, but it's just kind of your flavor, right? It seems like Blake Bortles is one of those huge Big Ben type dudes who can just kind of shake people off in the pocket and make plays that way, where Carr is trying to be more of like that Aaron Rodgers, where you quick release, make you read. So just kind of what kind of flavor of quarterback you like. They got a lot of work to go before they get mentioned with those guys, but they both had pretty solid years. I don't know if you follow fantasy. Blake Bortles had an awesome fantasy football year, and Derek Carr is having a solid year too. So, I mean, as some of these older guys like Peyton Manning retire out of the system, these are the types of guys that you're going to be drafting.
Yep, agreed. I'd rather see wins and fantasy points, of course, but trust me, it's nice to have any of your players mentioned when it comes to fantasy or anything, because for both of us, for years, it just has not been kind. Let's move on, talk about this game quickly. Seattle, Cleveland. Seattle wins 30-13. Seattle is now in the playoffs. I don't know if you guys know this, but the Browns are not. Just surprising. But Russell Wilson. I know. They're not in. They're not in, guys. The Browns hung around. But before we get into the game, I just want to point out Russell Wilson, first QB ever with 5 straight games of 3+ TDs and no interceptions. And let's you know, just savor on that. But check this one out that I heard. Doug Baldwin, and Jerry Rice are the only players to have 10+ touchdown catches in a 4-game span. Doug Baldwin is now Jerry Rice, guys.
No comment. I got nothing to say to that.
It's interesting how Seattle has sort of evolved. In that when they had Marshawn Lynch and they had Thomas Rawls, they were limiting what Wilson could do. They would run the ball first, and then they'd had Wilson play off that. Now with Christian Michael and Bryce Brown, they don't have as explosive a backfield as they had before, but Wilson is just making play after play after play. And to me, I mean, I don't think it's even close. There was this whole hubbub this week about, oh, is he an elite quarterback? Is Russell Wilson an elite quarterback? Like, you know, the typical ESPN-type conversation. But if we have to talk about it, then I don't think there's a question. I mean, I think the stats Ryan just provided is all the evidence we need. And when you talk about the weapons that Seattle has, it's interesting that all this has happened since Jimmy Graham went down with an injury. Since Jimmy Graham's gone down, Tyler Lockett has become a bigger part of the offense. Jermaine Kearse is making plays at over 100 yards. And then, of course, Baldwin, who is now the best player in NFL history, is making his share of the plays too. So everything looks good in Seattle right now. I wouldn't want to play them if I was the NFC East team. I think there might be a double digit spread in that game if Seattle goes into Washington or Philadelphia.
That's true.
Yep, I think
young,
you're right.
So when he started the league, they relied on the running game of their defense, and as he's evolved, he's being asked to do more. I mean, same thing happened with Ben Roethlisberger. Remember his rookie year? It was a pretty, hand the ball off to Jerome Bettis and let the defense win you the Super Bowl.
Sure.
And now he's one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen. I mean, Russell Wilson's on that same trajectory. His playoff run last year to take him to the Super Bowl, there was a couple games there. I think when they played the Carolina Panthers, he played ice cold, no mistakes, man. I mean, he's a big-time quarterback when it counts, and, as they're going into the playoffs, I think you're right. If I'm the NFC East, I do not want Seattle coming to town because I think you'll be a double-point underdog.
No, it's here they come again, and with the offense rolling, the defense doesn't quite seem to be what it is, but they still have the players on that side, and, yeah, if any quarterback is playing this well, it almost doesn't even matter, and no one wants to see the Seahawks in the playoffs right now in the NFC, that's for sure. But speaking of Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers got a huge win today, beating the Denver Broncos, a comeback win, 34-27. And even though Big Ben tried to make this a more interesting game by throwing an awful pick at the end of the game to give Denver one more shot, they do get the victory, and the Steelers get closer to being in the playoffs, battling with the Chiefs and the Jets, maybe for the division. And it's crazy that I agree with you what you said earlier, Andrew, that out of the Chiefs, Jets, and Steelers, clearly they're the best team and possibly just one of the best in the AFC, but they still have a chance to miss the playoffs, but a big win today.
Yeah, huge win for Pittsburgh. As a Jets fan, I was watching this game, really rooting hard for Denver, and when they went up 27-10 in the second quarter, I mean, of course, the Steelers have the best offense in football, and the game is never over, but coming into this week, like, if you asked me who had the best defense in football, I'd tell you a fully healthy Denver Broncos team. And Denver was missing a bunch of safeties. They were missing a bunch of safeties. I believe T.J. Ward didn't play. A couple other guys didn't play. But Antonio Brown just ripped him, just absolutely ripped him. He had over, I believe, he had 16 catches on the day. Yeah, he had 16 catches for 189 yards and two touchdowns against the best defense in football. So if they can't stop Antonio Brown, I don't see anyone being able to stop Antonio Brown. And if you have to ask me who the favorite in the AFC is, I'd say Pittsburgh. I'd say them over New England. I think their defense is a lot faster this year. Ryan Shazier made a great interception, I believe, on the second to last drive of the game for Denver. They're playing well up front with Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt, and they're making enough plays in the secondary to offset maybe some of the plays have to give up. So that's one challenger to New England and the AFC, to me, is a healthy Steelers team and the Cincinnati team with Dalton playing quarterback. Other than that, I think, unfortunately, I'm going to have to be watching the Patriots in the Super Bowl yet again.
Antonio Brown is the best wide receiver in the league, I think. So you watch all these athletes out there making plays, and I love watching Odell Beckham Jr. and some of these guys too. But Antonio Brown is easily, in my opinion, and I hate the Steelers, Antonio Brown is easily the best wide receiver in the league. He's phenomenal. But since New England has home field advantage, if Pittsburgh has to go to New England, I'd put my money on Bill Belichick finding a way to shut down the best player on the other team
and Mike Tomlin to forget how to manage the clock and just making a mistake. I mean, I think the Steelers' offense is probably the best offense in the league. Their defense is young and improving. But in New England against Bill Belichick, with all those guys coming back, I still would give the nod to the other team that I also hate. I'm, you know, just being objective. I still think that, you know, all signs point to the Patriots. But Pittsburgh is impressive. Their performance the second half of the season has been phenomenal. And the only person who can stop Antonio Brown apparently was Michael Vick, because when Big Ben got hurt, Antonio Brown disappeared.
There was one play in this game that I did want to talk about because I had never seen anything like it. The Broncos are up 27-20, about to field a punt. And the punt sort of dies at the sideline. And a typical football play you see all the time, the punt dies and the coverage team is going to down it. And one of the Pittsburgh Steelers players is about to pick up the ball and decides, you know what, I'm just going to touch the ball. I'm not going to pick it up. And the Broncos returner, Jordan Norwood, comes out from out of nowhere, scoops the ball up, runs across the field, and runs it back all the way for a touchdown for around 70 yards. That wasn't crazy enough. They ended up calling the play off because the Broncos' offense was already on their way onto the field because they assumed the play was going to be dead. So Denver was charged with an illegal substitution. They had about like 15, 16 guys on the field, and the play was called back. And then the Broncos didn't score another point the rest of the game. So just little stuff like this in the NFL that decides games. It just goes to show, like, in a 16-game sample, it's very hard to, like, so many little things happen that change the outcomes of games that it's very hard to just look at record and see who the best team in the league is. Because if Denver wins this game, maybe we're if that punt return wasn't called back, maybe we're talking about the Steelers on the outside looking in right now, and the best team in the AFC isn't in a playoff picture, and the only difference would be is that Denver's offense was able to sit their ass down on the bench and not make their way onto the field.
That's why Sitko nailed it, you know. Special teams is a one-third of the team. You guys can Sitko, Eagles, phenomenal special teams. Maybe if they had a better special teams coach out in Denver, we'd be having a different dialogue right now.
Beautifully. I like you. Go for it.
I was going to say, I like you're sitting in Sitko's chair. I mean, maybe it's the chair that makes Sitko a little nuts sometimes because, yeah, special teams matter, but that was something I've never seen before.
I should have created some kind of Eagles rant just to take Sicko's place this week, but I don't have one. I've been watching the Jags lose too long. I didn't have a crazy rant to go off of.
Every Monday morning.
That's right. That's right, Andrew. That was all beautifully put, and it's true. So many things can just change in an instant, and crazy plays you've never seen before. And speaking of which, Brock Lobster was playing amazing in the first half. The Broncos were rolling, and they had a big first-half lead, and it all just kind of disappeared. So the Broncos still, you know, they got the chance in the playoffs, and maybe the Steelers don't even get in, but it's going to be an exciting thing to watch for sure. We got two games left, guys. We did not save the best for last. We probably just talked about the best right there. But let's give the San Diego Superchargers their due, because maybe they're not going to be in San Diego anymore. You know, the Dolphins felt so bad about that they decided to not even come to the game, that they just let the Chargers have 30 points. They let Danny Woodhead do whatever he wanted and let the Chargers just have a nice party. And the Dolphins didn't want to be there. So let's give it up, Monty. I'm sure you don't want to, but for the Chargers.
I really thought that Kenneth Priest, our Chargers Supers fan, him and his old man should have gone to this game. It is the last game in San Diego that could at least watch their team go out in style. Danny Woodhead, man. I don't know if you guys, obviously Andrew remembers Danny Woodhead out in his division, but man, Danny Woodhead scored 4 touchdowns today, 3 receiving and 1 rushing. They said it was the Chargers' first rushing touchdown since week 1. So apparently the jury is out on Melvin Gordon, and he needs to stop fumbling and try to stay on the field because they're not very impressed with what he's done in his 2015 rookie campaign. Phillip Rivers, 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. He did throw 2 picks. But, man, I don't know why the world was saying that the Dolphins were going to be good going into this year. I many arguments drinking at the bars with my buddies pre-fantasy football draft, where they were all real high on the Dolphins, and I consistently told them, do not take any Dolphins. I may have, towards the end of the night, said that coach was going to get fired just because I just was not a believer in the fan. I didn't think they'd fire him in the middle of the season, but I did not think that the Dolphins would have a winning record. I don't think they really did much. That a J.E. rookie running back that they got did get a touchdown. Their other rookie, Devontae Parker, had a couple nice catches, but I think whoever comes into that coaching job has got their work cut out for them, because as a casual fan who, checks out the occasional Dolphins game, I'm not a believer in Tannehill. And so if he's not the guy, then you got to start over from square zero. And I don't know, like a game like today, he didn't do much. He didn't play well. He doesn't seem like he's the guy.
Yeah, it made me mad watching this game. Because, like you, Monty, I was never on Miami this year. I thought I had them pegged as the fourth team in AFC. I didn't think the roster was deep enough. The coach situation was a little muddled in that the coach, the GM, and the president all came in through different regimes. It seemed like there were conflicting interests there. But I still picked Miami in this game. I just thought San Diego was one of the worst teams in football. And after I made the pick, I said to myself, I was like, I already know what's going to happen. I'm going to be sitting on my couch on Sunday, wondering to myself how I could possibly pick Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins over Phillip Rivers in San Diego in the last game in Qualcomm Stadium. And I knew I was going to be shooting myself in the foot, and that's exactly what I did, because Rivers had a good game, and the Dolphins continually just look like the most boring team to watch in the league. Tannehill doesn't throw the ball more than 5 yards in the air, and they sort of have a lack of talent, if you will, past like the eighth best player on their roster. Once you get past that, it's a typical Mike Tannenbaum, who no name type of team. And again, as Monty said, the coach that comes into the situation has his work cut out for him.
And well, the GM probably too, with that Ndamukong Suh contract. I think that's going to kind of hamstring him for the next 5 years. I think Suh was good. I wanted him as a Raider going into the offseason, but as the way things shook out, I'm very glad that he's not wearing the Raiders colors.
Yeah, the Dolphins just buying the shiny toys and just not having enough. Every year, enough to go, about 7-9 or, maybe worse this season even. And just kind of the same old story with the Dolphins. I didn't really buy into them either. And they, like I said, they just they let the Chargers just have their fun today. And I don't know why, because I also picked the Dolphins, mainly because the Chargers have been terrible at home, but this was possibly their last hurrah, so nice to see them get the win. Honestly, I don't like seeing any franchise move, so we'll just see how that all pans out. Let's go with the final game we're going to talk about, the Cincinnati Bengals taking on the San Francisco 49ers. Big game, for the Bengals. They got to stay on top of the division. We got A.J. McCarron making his first start. No Andy Dalton, obviously, going against Blaine Gabbert, who threw 50 passes today. And the Bengals, they were up 21-0 at halftime. And almost, guys, the Niners got an onside kick with about 2 minutes left. And they were driving, but Gabbert threw his third interception of the day and took away the fairy tale ending. They also had a field goal blocked earlier in that game, and Gabbert's other interceptions were tipped drops from his receivers. So much kind of like Osweiler, by the way, not getting a lot of help, but the Bengals get the win and go to 11-3 with the 24-14 victory.
Yeah. As a Jets fan, it's sort of discouraging to see the Bengals only beat San Francisco, I believe, to be the worst team in football by 10 points, because in order for the Jets to make the playoffs, one of their scenarios would be Denver would have to lose against Cincinnati next week on Monday night. And the way that Cincinnati's offense looked, I don't see how McCarron's going to be able to move the ball on that Denver defense. I mean, they do have A.J. Green, we should mention, hurt himself in a walkthrough on Saturday. I hurt his back, and he re-aggravated that injury this week. So who knows if he's going to play. And even if he does, he might not be at 100%. Maybe Cincinnati just tries to get healthy and sort of sleeps their way into the playoffs. But maybe not either, because if they win next week, they clinch a bye because they're facing Denver. But again, San Francisco, one of the worst teams in football. Blaine Gabbert came down to earth, threw three interceptions, and sort of game sort of went the way everyone thought it was going to go.
That's right, A.J. McCarron.
Yes.
Getting his first win as a starter.
I think that the Cincinnati Bengals defense is phenomenal. Like, I've been a big fan of their defense and what Marvin Jones put together out there since Geno Atkins joined the squad. They did pick off the Real American three times, but with A.J. McCarron talking about becoming, you know, filling in for the Red Rifle the way that Tom Brady filled in for Drew Bledsoe, I think he is getting ahead of himself. He's got a lot of work to do, and this team is only going to go as far as that defense is going to take him. And against inferior talent like the 49ers, no problem. The defense shut him down. It was over at halftime. But next week, I think it's going to be like 10-7. We'll see how this game shows up. And against a solid quality playoff defense, we'll see what if the Bengals have a chance or if they're kind of on life support.
Huge game, huge, and it's going to be on Monday night, which is awesome. You got basically the battle for the two seed, and you got two guys at quarterback going against each other that who knows if they'll be the guy in the playoffs. I mean, I think they should stick with Osweiler, but I also like I like what McCarron said. You know, I don't think he was really saying he was Tom Brady, but hey, if Andy Dalton is still out, which it looks like he won't be for the playoffs, but if he's still out and McCarron wins a playoff game, that would be very, very interesting.
Totally agree. I like what he said, too. I like the confidence. I like, you know, the opportunity. It's all he's really talking about is, here's my opportunity. I prepared my whole life for this. I'm going to make the most of it. But I don't know. It's a lot different playing in the NFL and then playing for Alabama, who has got, you know, every player on your Alabama roster is better than the other team at every position, and your matchups all favor you. So, I mean, I think it's – at least it seems that way that some of the top players out of Alabama come into the NFL and they have to start playing against similar competition, and it's not as easy as it was in college, and they kind of fizzle out. So,
very true. Very true. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens there on Monday night. So, that's Week 15 with a couple games left, guys. Great job, of course. I'd say let's do it again, but – Mark Sitko should be back hosting this recap show again. I'm sure you'll hear from him, hear from Pod Vader. Make sure to keep checking out Next Fan Up. Follow us on Twitter. Send us some emails. Look for us on Facebook. Like us there. We got all our game previews, all sorts of stuff going on here with all the great guys. So thanks to Sam, Andrew, thank you, our Jets superfan. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, yeah, you know, hey, that was a weird pause. I'm doing my best. It's been a while since I hosted. Had some trouble with some automatic video playing, which you guys may have heard some weird sounds. You know, it's been a fun, wacky time. Monty, hey, thank you.
Yeah, sorry, I had to bow out a little bit. A little bit of an issue in the bathtub with the little man in the house. We had to do some serious disinfecting and bleach water to get the kid back up for bedtime, so...
Yeah,
little kids,
sometimes
that sort of stuff happens.
I hope your kid is okay, but nobody needed to know about that. All right, so thank you guys so much, and this was Next Fan Up, the Week 15 recap, and we'll see you next time.